This time on Culture File, we're off to Marylebone to meet our scent correspondent, Odette Toilette. You may remember we previously met Odette when she was allowing a packed room at one of her perfume events get a nostril full of how Fred Astaire might have smelt. For the next few weeks, Odette is going to be guiding us through the olfactory history of the 20th century, from 4711 to opium, from medicinal colognes to branded fetishes. To get the top off the bottle, this time Odette explains how the legacy smells and habits of the 19th century lingered on into the new one.
Yes, the 19th century, we actually still live in its legacy in a way. If you were a woman in the 19th century, you'd probably have worn, if you wore perfume, soliflor, which is a single floral note, like rose or lily of the valley. Cherry blossom was one that was very popular in England in the late 19th century. Fake cherry blossom, although probably made, would have been made from natural materials because synthetics didn't yet exist. And in fact, cherry blossom, weirdly, was advertised in magazines with a big illustration of a nun and had the catchphrase, "Nun nicer." So I don't quite know why, but... So you'd have had your single floral fragrances, and then you may have had Oriental perfumes, which were quite a vague, nefarious category of fragrances, but that were all about the lure of the exotic East, and which often, again in magazine adverts, would have pictures of smoke and genies and puffs of, you know, sort of an Aladdin-esque imagery, with this sort of Orientalism obsession that carried on right through the early part of the 20th century. So in a way, I feel like we've still got that. We've still got lots of people who like the idea of a single flower because it suggests some kind of aesthetically, I don't know if it's a purity or a simplicity that can be quite appealing. And again, with Oriental fragrances, ouds are hugely popular at the moment, and the iconography, which is often used in quite a nebulous way, of the East, that's still with us in perfumery too, so it's not as alien as it might seem at first glance. Common story that we have is that perfume in the 19th century was for prostitutes, performers, and women of ill repute. But that's a massive generalisation. And I think that we like the idea of this story, this idea that perfume's slightly naughty and that we've only just come to really like it, because I think it makes us feel good. But actually, when you look, say, at America, you had companies like the California Perfume Company, which later became Avon, which was doing a rollicking trade in door-to-door sales of perfume waters. And even though they might have been presented not as perfume, but as toilet waters or splashes or things you could use in the bath or in your room, they were definitely still there and being used by the middle classes, those who weren't necessarily the super rich. So again, I think because the fragrances that have survived from the 19th century are the kind of haute luxury or the more interesting ones, we forget about the everyday stuff. Rose, lily of the valley, stephanotis, honeysuckle, quite a lot of Florida waters and colognes, which had a sort of pseudo medicinal or reviving qualities.
At that stage, was branding important, or were we just talking about, you know, was rose the most important factor?
Branding was less important than it later became. I think that's because advertising was much less sophisticated and the means of distribution and promotion were slightly more limited. But you did have brands. You had the French houses like Houbigant and Guerlain and Pivet. And particularly towards the end of the 19th century, they became the real kind of it girls perfume houses. And then over in London, you had Penhaligon's and Floris and Grossmith in the late 19th century, which were very expensive and fashionable. So, yeah, you did have brands. And the problem was that there were lots of counterfeit goods. And so you see adverts through the 19th century, including the early part of the century, so we're talking Regency, where companies are saying, buy our lovely, lovely me smell, whatever. Warning, any perfume bottle that purports to be us but that is not for sale in our reputable Bond Street store, be warned, because it's not ours. So you had a lot of rip-off merchants, which does go to suggest that there was equity in these brands at the time. Synthetic violets were right at the end of the 19th century. The first synthetic in perfumery was coumarin, which was synthesised 1860s, 1870s, I think, and was first used in fragrance in the 1880s. And vanillin, which is a synthetic molecule that smells like vanilla, was another early one. And then you had the ironones, and then you started to get others coming through. But it sort of trickled through fairly slowly at first, and it took some really pioneering perfumers to start using them and experimenting with them and having fun. And really, around 1900, that's when it all started to go crazy.
Was there anything in for dig about using these synthetic fragrances, or did they have their own cachet?
Synthetic fragrances weren't talked about. They were talked about in the trade press, and you can see that pharmacists and chemists were very excited about all these new molecules coming in. But if you were a member of the public buying perfume, unless you were particularly in the know, you wouldn't have been told it was a synthetic material, because the romance of the perfume fields of grass and the peasants picking the jasmine petals under the baking sun or whatever, that was the mythology, and that was so precious a story that no one wanted to come out and say, oh, you know what, that material, you love the smell of, that's not a violet, that's been synthesized in a lab. We still have this kind of nervousness around synthetics. When you look at a fragrance sales copy, the brand's never going to tell you that actually that lovely rose you're smelling is a mixture of five different chemicals. We like to believe it is the rose, or that it is the violet or the jasmine.
Odette Toilette there, and she'll be talking about imaginary flowers and olfactory intellectual property in the early 20th century next time on Culture File.